Welcome to About 4 O'Clock Bootleg Edition. When Father Garrett and Father Drew and I first decided to make a vocations podcast, we recorded several episodes that were never meant to see the light of day. They were just a chance for us to practice using the equipment and get used to each other's rhythm. However, a few of those episodes, we thought the conversation was just so natural, so good, so enjoyable that each of us took things from those conversations to pray about and think about that we thought we should go ahead and share those with others. So that's this episode. It was recorded all the way back in October of 2021. Now remember, we were still getting used to the recording equipment, so the quality is maybe not as good as some of our later recordings, or at least I hope we've gotten better. In this conversation, we look at the effects Father Capon's funeral rites had on us and on our priesthood. If you don't already know the story of Father Capon, stop listening to the podcast now, pull over if you're driving, go get to the internet, look up Father Capon, and learn his story, then come back to the podcast. I suppose one other thing that should be noted is the name. Father Capon, Father Capon, we're not going to get into that, but I am told the most appropriate way to pronounce the first name is Amel. Though it is pronounced even by family members in different ways. We're going to go with Amel, even though we don't use that maybe in the rest of the podcast. Amel. Hope you enjoy.
I would like to invite each of you to listen carefully to God's voice in your heart. Listen to His voice. Do not be afraid. Do not be afraid.
Welcome to About 4 O'Clock, a podcast on vocations and discernment. My name is Father Chad Arnold. I'm the vocations director for the Diocese of Wichita and the assistant director at the House of Formation. With me on the podcast on mic number 2 is Father Garrett Burns.
How we doing?
He is the associate at St. Margaret Mary's here in Wichita and also the assistant vocation director. On mic 3 is Father Drew Hoffman.
What's going on?
He is the pastor at the St. Paul Center at Wichita State University and also the assistant vocation director. Today, we are going to be talking about Father Capon, what he means to us in our priesthood. For those that may not know, just recently, Father Capon's remains were discovered and they were brought back in high ceremony to the diocese. And I don't know anyone that attended those ceremonies that wasn't impacted or just generally moved by it. And so we just want to talk a little bit about today about how Father Capon coming home and what that means to us and how we've experienced that in our priesthood. So who wants to jump in first?
Yeah, I'll go for it. I've grown up with a deep devotion of Father Capon, my godmother, who I attribute any holiness that I have to. She's been praying for me daily. She's a very holy woman. So she's from Pilsen, where Father Capon grew up and served as a priest for a little while before going off to war to serve as a chaplain. And so I grew up hearing a little bit about him and had devotion to him, but definitely those funeral rites and just that whole experience deepened my love for him. I experienced him as a brother priest. And one of the things that has really stuck with me, one story that I hadn't heard before, but it was just that Father Capon would basically ride around on his bike out as he was a chaplain. And they said he would listen for the gunfire. So he would listen for bullets about to know where to go. And I thought about that. I was like, that's not me. Maybe I'm not made for military chaplaincy.
It's similar in St. Margaret Mary's parish boundaries, right?
Sometimes it is. But yeah, that's definitely left an impact on me of just to take that as an image for my own priesthood, to actually wake up in a day and to go and listen for the bullets and not to run the other way, but to go to just make myself available to people and to see who's most in need, most in spiritual brokenness and even mm-hmm. danger, and actually seek that out. And yeah, I think it's a powerful witness, a powerful call for us to grow as priests in courage and bravery and to go out to people. And even in discernment for guys out there contemplating this, I think that has to be in our day and age a part of a discernment process to say, in this current society, am I ready to go out and face the fire a little bit and be ready to go out and battle? We're always going to be weak in that. There's going to be some fear and some anxiety, but a part of any authentic call, at least in our church today, where we are in the relationship with the wider culture. There has to be a part of that, of I'm ready to go listen for the gunfire and go to the bullets to see where I'm needed and to serve and to bring Christ to people in that way and in those moments. So
that should be like an Episcopal motto. Listen for the bullets.
Listen for the bullets.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah. I want to write that on my mirror to see that in the morning. Listen for the bullets.
Listen for the bullets. And like, there's a bunch of stuff there. There's like my own listening. Like, how do I know my people? That's something active that he's doing. He's going out and he's riding his bike. So it's not just like he sits in the house and does his thing. And if he hears bullets, then he goes and does it. No, he's actively searching out bullets. And if I'm not willing to do that or not interested, which is all, like you said, that's all of us. Why? What's going on? Because there's something then in my heart that's pulling back from that. Is it something that I'm nervous about? Is it something in my own prayer? Is it what is keeping me from doing that? That's a, like a meditation and an examination.
I mean, I just can't even imagine, you know, standing there and hearing the sound of gunfire. All that that means. You know, it's not like on the farm where it just means someone's shooting, you know, clay pigeons. But to hear that gunfire, I'm like, okay, that's the direction I'm going to go. That's amazing.
And to know he can, God, that's where God wants us to go, and he's going to protect us and use us. I mean, in the metaphorical way, when I'm afraid to go to where the bullets are, where I hear them, it's like, well, I don't know what I'm going to say. I don't know how I'm going to be any help. But there's just this such great trust in Father Capon that God wants me there. He's going to protect me and allow me, use me in some way, even if I can't understand that. Like, I have such a trust in him that, yeah, I listen for and go to the bullets. So
I love that. That's good. I know for me, one of the great things with the funeral rites was just he really became a real brother in a way that I had not experienced before. You know, like you guys, I grew up around the idea of Father Capon, heard about him, which, side note, I've been amazed at how many people did not grow up learning about Father Capon. You know, as I've gone outside of the Wichita area, we've done a really good job of telling that story, I think, here in Wichita at our Catholic high schools and nowhere else, apparently. Yeah.
I experienced that on the college campus, both at K-State and at Wichita State. I had to talk about it a lot, something that I've always taken for granted, particularly like Kansas City kids. And I made fun of our Kansas City kids, both at K-State and Wichita State for that. Like, you don't, Wichita is like this podunk place that you never even think about. But really, to be fair, those kids, why would they have heard about it unless their teachers at those schools taught about it and they have 1,000 other things? But you're right. I met a girl from Marion County the other day, Catholic.
Really?
I had no idea who Chaplain Capon was.
Holy cow.
I say the other day, it was before the in the lead up to the funeral. No idea. And a practicing Catholic.
Mm-hmm.
Just didn't know.
Wow.
And so I think you're exactly right in that. Telling the story, we sometimes get tired of it.
Yeah.
But the people can't get tired of it because there's still souls that need to hear it.
Right. For me, we talked in our last practice episode about how powerful the priest's funeral was in your vocation, Garrett, and how wanting the seminaries to be able to do that, and yet to be able to have a funeral mass for him just made it real for me in a way it had not been before. You know, I'd always believed in him, believed in him as if he were some fictional character or
is
possibly
he real?
Fictional. I do believe. you know, I had admired him. I knew his story and that when his casket was before us, and the night before when we said Vespers, where it was just the priest in the cathedral and just the remains of Father Capon, and we did the Salve Regina like we do over the other brother priests as they have died, he just really became a brother to me. And suddenly I felt I could call in favors in a way maybe I didn't before. Yeah. I mean, it's not like, okay, he's just another part of the communion of saints. No, this is a guy who has a vested interest in the diocese, me as a younger brother, as the city and all of those things going on. And so it's not just asking, hey, could you do this? Like, no, buddy, you got a duty to it. Mm-hmm. Father Capon, I'm not telling you what your duties are, but I definitely felt just, that more reality that, this is one of my brother priests. And that was a powerful experience for me. Just, he just became a friend in a new way, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah. I noticed just in my personal prayer, part of it was just there's the still existing confusion of, is it Father Capon or Capon or what is it?
That's funny.
But
we'll never be settled. What are the mysteries of life?
It will never be settled. But I was frustrated by that in my prayer. I'm like, what am I supposed to call you? But then I thought of that, of he's a brother priest. And if I'm just talking directly to you guys, I never call you Father Arnold or even Father Chad. I just say Chad. And so I began just to refer to him by his first name, by Emil. And just that shift of, he's a brother priest and he's ready to and desires to provide for me and intercede. So I sense that shift as well to a brotherhood rather than this guy up on a pedestal and this made up Santa Claus like figure or something. So, yeah.
And Father David Leese, the vicar general for the diocese, in his homily that he gave at the vigil, spoke about that if Chaplain Capon had not died, they would have known each other. They would have been hanging out at Emil's house at the priest retirement center. He might have been covering at their parish and telling stories and things like that, and probably wouldn't have lived to see our day, but we would have known some of you. But even maybe you, Chad, he would have had some connection with you. And so actually on Emil's, I like us calling him that. Do that
more. It sounds pretty cool.
On his funeral day, a priest that I really loved in Manhattan had his funeral that same day, later in the afternoon, so that Bishop Vinke could get back. It was really a cool comparison of these two guys who were only born about 7 years apart and lived very different lives. But actually, Chaplain Capon's life would have looked a lot like Merlin Kiefer's life had Chaplain Capon not died there. And they're both these differing levels of priesthood. Did kind of help make that connection a little more real.
You mentioned Father David's homily. I would say, I think all of the homilies knocked it out of the park. Yeah. I mean, we had 3 days of celebrations. You know, first night was Vespers and Father Eric Weldon spoke at that in a very Father Eller Weldon fashion.
Very on brand.
But it fit. It fit the occasion.
It would be weird if it had been different.
Right, right.
But it
was like he was talking about a brother with brothers. So, you know, Father Weldon's penchant for kind of off-color humor or remarks or witticisms, however you want to call it. But it fit in that moment, and it was really good. And then Father David's was just the humanity of Father Capon. The next day he was preaching the homily, and it was just really good in driving that brotherhood home. And for me, Bishop had a whole nother, you know, just level. You could see... You don't often see Bishop Kemi getting emotional when he preaches, but when he was talking about being able to touch the skull of Father Capon, you know, he was choking up a little bit at there, and just his thoughts in that I thought were just tremendously profound. I thought all three of them just knocked it out of the park.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. As I couldn't have been more psyched to be a priest while I was there. That's why, I mean, for us specifically, everyone was psyched, but I was so psyched about my priesthood while I was there. And when you think about it, this is a guy who gets ordained a priest, has his struggles in early priesthood, in difficulties in the parish, and a prophet is respected except in his native place, and he's back in his home parish where he grew up. I can't imagine. I grew up in St. Elizabeth Van Seton. St. Elizabeth Van Seton is a huge parish. Not everybody there knows me, so it would have been different, but a lot of those people know me, and it would have been weird going back there as the priest. And so a parish that every single soul knows who he was, I can't imagine that. Difficulties with all society. I mean, he has some difficult stuff. Studies canon law, right? Well, no, what does he study?
Was it canon law or administration? Like education administration, further, I think. Yeah,
further studies.
Less interesting.
And then he goes and passes away at a young age, enduring tremendous torments. And watching that, I wanted to be a priest so intensely. And I thought about one of my favorite quotes, Graham Greene, who wrote The Power and the Glory and The Heart of the Matter and The End of the Affair, some of my favorite books. He was kind of he's a Catholic who struggled at times with Catholicism. And he was asked about vocations and he asked about priestly celibacy. Why should they keep having priestly celibacy? And this is what he said. And I thought about this a lot during Capon's funeral. He says, I think that for many people, especially the young, the priesthood must have the attraction of a crack unit, like a soldier, like stormtrooper type unit. It's an organization which has to train for combat, one which demands self-sacrifice. People are attracted to the church where there's danger. I'm convinced that the drop in vocations has to do with the fact that we don't put across clearly enough the attraction to be found in a difficult and dangerous calling. That we have less priests, not because we've made the priesthood sound too hard, but we've made it sound too easy. And Chaplain Capon is the great example of not easy priesthood. And that's what I desire. And everyone wants to be a knight, but no one wants to bleed. And Chaplain Capon, if I want my life to matter as much as Chaplain Capon's, I need to give it away to the degree that Chaplain Capon gave it away. I need to run toward bullets. I need to support my brothers. I need to, again, I want my life to look like Chaplain Capon's, like we've talked about with these funerals. That only happens when I give it away. It doesn't happen just because I'm a great preacher. It doesn't happen because I live in comfort. It doesn't happen because I'm a great confessor. I mean, all those things are maybe nice, but it happens exclusively when you give it away in that kind of dangerous soldier unit of brothers together entering into a battle.
I think one of the temptations in vocation work is just to present, yeah, priesthood's great, and it is, and
best.
I love it.
It's the best.
Yeah, but I started thinking about that a year or so ago. I can't talk just about that because that's not the reality, and because there is a desire to be challenged. There is a human part. You know, if I love God, I want to strive for him, and I don't want to take just the rose path for that.
And we get spoiled quite a bit as priests, and so it's nice to share that. I do it too much. Like, I'm going to Wichita State game, and I have awesome tickets to the Wichita State basketball game tonight. We play at some cool golf courses. We've been to some cool places that we wouldn't have. Like, my dad likes tagging along. My dad's coming to the game tonight. He's in his 60s. He's never sat in the seats we're going to sit in tonight. This guy who worked his tail off his whole life in accounting and raising a family and things like that I, at age 30, then get to do. And we've had those experiences. And so you're tempted to share that, possibly out of some arrogance, but also like, hey, listen, this is a cool life.
Lots of perks.
But that isn't what gets guys. It's not what got me. It's not what got you two. Mm-hmm. That's not what got me. Mm-hmm. And that's not what fires us up when we hear about Chaplain Capon and the other priests we admire so much. And so that was good to reflect on.
One of the things you mentioned that was mind-altering for me about Father Capon too, that just kind of finally hit home, was his age. Now, you guys aren't experienced this, and the likely target audience of this podcast has not experienced it, but I had to realize that Father Capon was younger than I am currently. And, you know, in my mind, because I'd grown up with the idea, he's always older. Yeah. Like, if I pictured him right now, prior to the funeral, he's in his, you know, mid-40s or something like that. He's always, you know, this senior that. I'm like, oh, no, he was younger than I was, which is also a kick in the backside. I'm like, okay, I gotta work a little bit harder.
Yeah. But he was also working with a bunch of 20-something-year-olds that were mostly idiots.
Right.
True. Which is just like your life.
That's your whole life.
The House Formation POW camp.
Yeah, they have similar. I would imagine some of the same hijinks go on. Some behind-the-back stuff, stealing of things, some nicknames.
We did have an eye injury for someone misusing a tool. So, yeah, those things happen.
Exactly.
It's called Arnold Valley, but for different reasons than I like Capon Valley.
I think it's important, too, to talk about the priest he was before he went to Korea. As you were pointing out, Drew, when I look at the books that are written about him, I've read a few of them, and they're great books, but there's maybe like 6 or 7 pages on the, you know, years that he was a priest before he went to Korea. Now, it wasn't that long. It was, I think, 3-4 years, right in that area. I think it was 3 years an associate and then less than a year pastor before going off there. And then there were some breaks in between there. But the way people spoke about him, honestly, wasn't that different than some of the good priests of the diocese I know that their parishioners would speak about him. So it wasn't like he was doing miracles or anything before he went to Korea or was doing anything, except he was doing all the small things well.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
One of the books talks about, as an associate, his pastor, I can't think of his name right now.
Tawny?
No.
No.
Yeah, not important. Yeah. He's an older dude, a little set in his way, big on his afternoon nap. And so Emil was out working in the front yard, you know, doing some landscaping, and the wheelbarrow had a really squeaky wheel. And so he knew that if he used that, he'd wake up the pastor. And so it's talking about all the efforts he's going to fix this squeak so he doesn't wake up the pastor. And the book presents it like this is some saintly heroic thing. I'm like, no, that's just being a good associate. You don't annoy the pastor. Yeah, I mean, you find the pastor's rhythm and you work around it. And that's just being a good associate.
Basically your one job.
That's right.
Don't wake the pastor if you don't have to. But so he was just a good priest. And then he gets to Korea, and as the cross does, and as the horrors of that do, but it was just an intensely purifying time. And so he had that base layer of goodness so that when the cross did come, then he was able to take it up, you know, so many notches and really step into this is who the Lord is calling me to be, and really to access that next level of sanctity.
Yeah, I think it's so important because most of the time our lives don't feel like we're in the battlefield, but he lived many years of just a pretty quote-unquote ordinary life, but that was preparing him, and just the way he responded simply but with great virtue and honesty and integrity and courage, that was the only way he was able to do that once he got into the fire. And so even if your life doesn't feel like you're in a prisoner of war camp, you're in a battle, just those small daily decisions is what's preparing you maybe for some in the future, and just that creates that person that you are that will respond however God's going to ask you to in the future. So,
Have you heard the Osro Barkley story? Have you heard that name before?
I don't know that
name. So Osro was Chaplain Capen's roommate in maybe basic training or something like that.
Really?
Sick name.
Yeah.
And Osro is ticked because he's not Catholic. He doesn't want to be Catholic. He doesn't like Catholics. He's dating a Catholic, but he's not going to become Catholic. And so he's angry that not only is he rooming with a Catholic, but he's rooming with a Catholic priest. And over the time period, not only does Osro like Capen, he then gets married in the church and becomes a Catholic. And that's the kind of stuff that isn't just miracle stuff. That's him just being a good priest that right. people mm-hmm. like, that Osro enjoys being around, and good human formation, and being a guy that another bro wants to be with. Now, years down the line, Mrs. Barkley, and I don't know her name, finds out she can't have kids. Her fallopian tubes have closed. And so they pray to their friend who they assume has died. And she ended up having three kids.
Wow.
And they don't have an explanation for it.
Wow.
The hospital burnt down. And so they don't have the records, or else they really? Think that that would have possibly been one of the things that they placed forth. Now, this would have been long ago. Yeah. Probably wouldn't have worked with the miracle, yeah. with all the details and stuff like that. But Scott Carter speaks about this.
I was going to say, where'd you hear
Scott's
that?
Scott's the one who told me the story.
I've never heard that one.
So it was never really a consideration for the actual miracle. But I like those two albums. So it's like, it's not miraculous. Him just being a good priest and a bro. Mm-hmm. And then mm-hmm. as he builds upon that suffering, then there's the possibility that that unbelievable stuff mm-hmm.
right.
can occur.
Right. I recall in one of the books, it quotes one of his classmates, and they describe him as the most normal of guys, yeah. which, you know, that's not how we usually describe the saints. Oh, yeah, yeah. St. Augustine, he was the most normal of guys.
Have you heard Stanley Rother's sister ever talk about him?
No, but I'd love to.
She's just like, I don't know what y'all want me to say. She's pretty funny about it, but she's just like, it was my brother. It's not like she's like, he was the holiest child to ever come out of Cartier, Oklahoma. She's like, he's my brother, and he did dumb brother things. Yeah. And he was great. I mean, he's great. I love my mm-hmm. brother. But and that's exaggerating a little bit. But she isn't. She speaks in similar manners. Like, yeah, he's great.
That's one of the great things, Stanley Rother, the book, The Shepherd Did Not Run. It was written soon enough that the hagiography couldn't get exaggerated. So like, there's a part in where they're quoting him like, yeah, we didn't think he was that smart. Love it. Some lovely nun. Yeah, we just didn't think Stanley was that smart.
Maybe he wasn't. It worked out okay.
Right.
He learned a language.
But, wouldn't it be the first saint that wasn't the best at academics?
Right. And we heard that line one time in seminary, and we all looked around at each other and go, so which one of us is the most normal? We had trouble deciding. Not because it was high competition for us all being so normal. Yeah,
that's right.
Sometimes that's just the goal. Just be normal, guys.
Yeah.
That should be a house poll here at the House of Formation. Let the guys vote who is the most normal.
The Father Capen Award for most normal man in the house.
That's funny.
I'm Father steal Capen, that for sure, most actually. Normal. Yeah, that's good.
Actually, I'm going to steal good. That for sure at St. Paul.
One of the other cool things for me with the funeral, too, is realizing what a big stage he was on. We talked about how, you know, he's really known here in Wichita, maybe not so outside of the diocese. But beyond that, I mean, you know, we had the bishop from Alaska. Yeah. We had how many bishops there? The military mm-hmm. sending people in, the priest who gave the eulogy after that, which was astounding.
That could be a whole podcast topic.
Oh, gosh.
Just that.
Discussing that, like doing Lexio Divina on that.
Yeah, I need that clip.
10 minutes of my life.
I definitely want that for Quo Vadis. Like, we need to show that clip at Quo Vadis. But, you know, he wasn't just some Johnny come lately. He was, chaplain of West Point. But if you look at one of the earlier interviews, he's got the image of in his office hanging front and center behind his desk of Father Capen saying Mass on the Jeep hood. I mean, you know, he's been cool. Following this guy. Yeah, he's legit.
Yeah.
And, you know, the groups you hear from South Korea who are coming to the cathedral to visit the relics of Father Capen. Yeah. I mean, he is huge on a stage that I hadn't fully appreciated until the funeral rites. And the seminarians, like, I didn't fully appreciate it. They were a few rungs below me. I mean, it blew their minds. Cool. But yeah, they were great days. Definitely filled me with greater zeal for my own priesthood and to strive to move towards the bullets, as you were saying, Garrett. Any other things out of Father Capen's funeral that sticks out?
I appreciated his humor. They kept bringing up the humor in the hard situations. Like, that's something I constantly have to talk to myself about. Like, I like having fun when things are going well, and then things don't go well, and I clam up as a priest. And so, hey, how can I be at a place that some of those out things, of course, they're going to affect you. Of course, you're going to move up and down. But I thought his ability to remain himself, regardless of exterior negative or maybe even positive. Like he stays himself, and a human should move a little bit back and forth on that. But I thought that was particularly helpful for me to hear.
Yeah. One other thing I remember, forget which book it was in, but just someone talking about even just on the farm as a kid or as an associate, he said yes without asking questions. And that's a challenge and invitation for me. I think in priesthood of just someone asked me to do something and I have 100 questions. Yeah. How much time is it going to take? Could someone else do this? And just to say yes, because God's will is coming through this person or whatever it is. And you're just saying yes. And I don't have further questions. I'm a total availability to you, to the people, to God. And yeah, well, I mean, that's a great vocational meditation too, of you're going to have lots of questions and you need to engage those honestly. But at the end of the day, it's just it's a yes to whatever God wants you to do.
Absolutely. Well, I think that'll wrap up this podcast. We've been talking about Father Capon. If you have not been there and you're anywhere near the Wichita area, go to the cathedral. Go see him. Go. It's a beautiful, are we calling it a tomb? What are we calling it? A casket?
Tomb is good.
Tomb? Okay. Go to his tomb. It's right at the foot of the cross. Father Capon will draw you to the foot of the cross and then turn your direction towards the Lord. Go see him. This has been About 4 O'Clock, a podcast on vocations and discernment. If you have questions in the future, feel free to send them to vocations@catholicdiocesewichita.org, I think is the email. I'll definitely know that before we do this for real. And other than that, then I'll hit a button to play us out on some music. And yeah, freestylings of Father Garrett.